special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Yeah, mic check 1 2 1 2. Mic check 1 2 1 2. We are here live on the Boxing Source Radio Show on the Go Long Media Channel on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, James Bell. I'm the lead boxing analyst for the Cold Truth on Sports and Go Long Media. Number to dial in to talk boxing is 347-237-5539. Once again, that is 347-237-5539. Press one key to get on cue and be able to talk live on the show. Pretty much got a few things to go over this week for this week's episode. We had, you know, a couple of fight cards that were, you know, kind of notable within the boxing world that happened last night. One that involved a light heavyweight contender at the Mohegan Sun Casino, and there was another one that had the unification bout in the 140-pound division that was, you know, over in the Scotland area. So we're going to be touching a bit on those there, and also other news and notes within the boxing world. So we're pretty much going to get right into it. excuse me. You know, just trying to, you know, catch up here with the end of the weekend here going into next week. But just wanted to get into what happened with the unification of the super lightweight titles first. You had, you know, Ricky Burns going up against Julius Ndongo. And this was, you know, over in Glasgow, Scotland. you had, you know, Julius Ndongo there that came in there 21-0, you know, with 11 KOs, you know, fairly good boxer. You know, was, you know, fighting out of, you know, Namibia for most of his career. Had like a, you know, regional super lightweight title. You know, for a couple of years, and then he got his shot at a world title last year, pretty much at the end of last year when he went up against Edward Troyanovsky. Edward Troyanovsky was the, you know, IBF super lightweight champion and IBO super lightweight champion, pretty much getting those belts from Cesar Rene Cuenca, who had like a 48-fight win streak up until he fought Troyanovsky. And then Troyanovsky ended up beating him by TKO twice in the first fight and then the pretty much the rematch. And then Troyanovsky was able to defend it once before he went up against Julius Ndongo. And this was in Russia, so... And Ndongo was able to defeat him by KO, pretty much was within the first few rounds. You know, pretty much didn't, well, the punch, he pretty much saw the punch coming, but he couldn't really do much on it. was a good right hook that Julius Ndongo threw that ended up foiling Troyanovsky. And so he was able to get that KO victory to win the IBF and IBO super lightweight titles. And then the very next fight, he goes to the United Kingdom. So it's like two consecutive title fights that he had where he went into the pretty much the home country of his opponent, you know, after being in Namibia for pretty much his, you know, his whole career to fight for these super lightweight world championships. And so he was able to go in there last night against Ricky Burns, who held the IBF super lightweight championship. And pretty much, I wouldn't necessarily say it was like a boxing clinic, but it was something where, you know, Julius Ndongo was able to, you know, outbox him for pretty much the whole fight. Just a real quick, you know, just seeing here that, you know, Ndongo was able to get the IBF belt from Ricky Burns and, you know, retain the WBA and IBO super lightweight championships. He got a unanimous decision with a score of 116-112, one score of 118-110, and one score was 120-108. So he got a shutout victory from one scorecard. He got, you know, 10 rounds to 2 on another scorecard, and he got 8 rounds to 4 on the last scorecard there with that 116-112. So he was able to, you know, stay undefeated and move it to 22-0, you know, while Ricky Burns fell to 41-6-1. You know, I pretty much, you know, for me, I was like looking at this fight as like, you know, what Ricky Burns could do against somebody like Julius Ndongo. I mean, Ndongo, you know, was just coming off that big win where he was able to, you know, knock out Edward Troyanovsky, and actually he came off of a string of TKO victories, so to speak. So I think that, you know, Ricky Burns was kind of like looking at, you know, what was happening with Julius Ndongo in those past few fights, and I guess was, you know, fighting, you know, kind of tentative to me in reference to that, pretty much in reference to what was going on there in this particular fight. You know, it just seemed like, you know, Ndongo was able to do, you know, what he needed to do, one, and then, you know, after pretty much later on in the fight, he was able to do what he wanted to do. So that kind of like, you know, just said that he pretty much had, you know, all the advantages in that particular fight between him and Ricky Burns there. Now, I mean, there were like a couple of times where it looked like, you know, Ricky Burns could have had a shot to try to get back into it, pretty much like in the seventh and eighth rounds. There kind of like looked like Julius Ndongo was, you know, not throwing as much as he was at first, but it didn't seem like Ricky Burns was able to, you know, take advantage of that. And so that just, you know, pretty much like eliminated, you know, any chance that Ricky Burns had of trying to, you know, get back into the fight there. So once again, you have, you know, Julius Ndongo getting the unanimous decision victory over Ricky Burns in Scotland there. Just wanted to see if I could get into what he was, what these fighters were saying here. You know, with Ngannou getting this unanimous decision victory. You had Ricky Burns out there saying that he had no excuses for the performance. He said that the better man won, that Ngannou had like an awkward style there in the ring, and that Ngannou was a lot better than he thought he was, and that he could, you know, really hit, you know, really punch. So I think that, you know, Ricky Burns probably came in there with the expectations that that he probably could have, you know, had a little bit more, a little bit of success against Julius Ngannou. But once, you know, those first few rounds kind of like came through and he kind of got caught a couple of times, then that kind of like changed what the approach was for Ricky Burns. But, you know, as a result, he couldn't really, you know, get much off until pretty much, like I was saying, the seventh or eighth round. Didn't necessarily say that that was going to be, you know, it for him in reference to his career. He's had, you know, 47, 48 professional fights there in his career, as Ricky Burns has been fighting since, I would say, was that about since 2001. So he's had a very extensive career here, you know, around 16 years or so. So it's kind of something for him to say that he has like a, he thinks that he still has a few years left with some big fights left that he could, you know, be able to do there. So, I mean, yeah, he's, you know, held the WBA Super Lightweight Championship. He held the, you know, the WBO Lightweight Championship and the Super Featherweight Championship. So, I mean, he's been, you know, a multi-division world champion over the course of his career. But, you know, going back since, you know, 2014, he's had, you know, four losses in his career. I mean, he's been, what is it, like 5-4 since 2014. You don't lose him too, like I said, you know, with this latest loss here to Julius Ngannou. He lost to, you know, Omar Figueroa Jr. and losing to Terrence Crawford among that list. So it's going to be something to figure out what he's going to be able to do in order to extend his career in the boxing ring. And if you have somebody like Eddie Hearn that will be able to, you know, give him more shots out there in the United Kingdom. Just getting a phone call in here. Area code 202, what's going on with you?
Hey, this is World Rank, man. Just calling in, man. Just checking in, see what's good with the boxing game.
Hey, good to hear from you, World Rank. Yeah, I was just going through, you know, what happened over in the UK as Julius Ngannou was able to, you know, win another world championship there in the super lightweight division over Ricky Burns. You know, was able to score a unanimous decision victory. And, you know, he's able to stay undefeated. And he has, you know, two of the major titles there at super lightweight with Terrence Crawford having the other two titles at super lightweight. So, I mean, everyone pretty much knows now, you know, who the top two guys are in that 140-pound division. Yeah, I went through what pretty much happened in the fight that, you know, Ngannou was able to get, you know, a shutout scorecard in one of the scorecards there. But for me, I was just thinking about, you know, what, you know, how Ricky Burns would be able to approach this fight because, I mean, yeah, Ricky Burns was able to, you know, have a world championship, but you wouldn't necessarily, you know, think that Burns would be somebody that's, you know, that would be among the top within the 140-pound division or within, like, you know, 140 and 135 or something like that, even though he's been a multi-division world champion.
I mean, you got to give the guy credit based on what he – to be able to be a three-time world champion to not be that A-level guy in any of those divisions, like you said, I mean, there's accomplishment in itself. I mean, I know that fight, the Burns and Dongo fight, isn't, you know, a big fight in theory, but guys, you know, fights like that for guys like me and you in terms of the hardcore, it means something in terms of that because, you know, it's two belts on the line, and now it's closer to being a clear number one in the division. So anytime you can get that, I think that's really important, you know, in terms of any division and, you know, being able to point to, hey, this is the number one guy in that division, or, you know, these are the top two guys in that division. And that fight helped clear it up. But in terms of Burns' career, I mean, I admire the guy because he's held a country's boxing in terms of the high level in Scotland for the last 5 years, you know, even though, you know, he has never been the guy in any of those divisions. You know, there's been for over a few years, you know, there's always been talk mm-hmm. of Burns, Broner happening
yep.
at 130, at 35, even at 40, but that fight never materialized. So Burns finally gets the opportunity to unify some belt, and, you know, even though it's not with the big name, you know, to be able to have that on his home setting. And, you know, I give the guy credit to be able to make the most, because to me, that guy, Ricky Burns, to me, he's like Paulie Malignaggi, a guy that doesn't have much more than heart in the jab, but, you know, even dedication for those two guys, they got very far in the sport, just with those two things. So
right.
I admire him, you know, just to get to the point where he was. So.
Yeah, that's true. And, I mean, you know, this is a guy that, you know, did fight, you know, the likes of Michael Cassidy's, and he did get to, you know, 12 rounds through with Terrence Crawford in the lower weight classes, and also Raimundo Beltran, among others. So, I mean, he's fought a few guys that have been, you know, notable within those divisions. It's just that, you know, with him fighting in Scotland for much of his career, he hadn't really, you know, gotten his name out there that far, you know, further from, you know, the European area, unless if it was, like, going against those guys like a Terrence Crawford or, you know, Omar Figueroa Jr. or something like that. So that was my thing on him. I'm just adding in another caller in here, area code 205. What's going on with you?
What's going on, James? It's Mike Grady. How you doing?
Doing all right. Just, you know, it was just finishing up what, you know, happened within the super lightweight unification fight with Ricky Burns, Julius Ndongo. And now we pretty much have, you know, two guys at the 140-pound division that, you know, are pretty much one and two. You have Ndongo there that, you know, just got the IBF belt from Ricky Burns. And then you have, you know, Terrence Crawford. That's preparing to, you know, go into a fight here pretty soon, you know, when he goes up against Felix Diaz on May 20th. So, you know, once you have, you know, that fight happen, of course, you know, people are going to be looking for a unification bout for, you know, all of the major belts there in the 140-pound division between Terrence Crawford and Julius Ndongo. And that's probably something that, you know, even if it's going to be in Omaha, Nebraska, that's something that I don't think that either, you know, one of those guys have a problem at this point, you know, to kind of like prove who's the best within that division. Do you have like any thoughts about that potential matchup there, Mike?
So I unfortunately only saw like the last two rounds of the fight. And so, you know, when I saw the scorecard, I was like, oh, it had been interesting to see, you know, like how the guy moved through the ring and stuff. So I would trust y'all opinion on like what you saw, like how is his style? I didn't go back and look at it either. I don't think I will go back and look at it, but I'm just going to ask you the question and I'll trust it. You know, y'all give me the rundown, but how is the guy's style? And like, is he awkward? Like what kind of style would you label him as? And, you know, because it seemed like from what they said, from what the commentator said, it like he blew him out, but then, you know, when the scorecards came, it seemed like there were some closer too. But I mean, that could have been the favorite getting, you know, the close rounds or whatever. What you think?
Well, I mean, I would say that, like, Ricky Burns kind of, you know, said that pretty much after the fight that they didn't expect Ndongo's fight style to be the way it was. That they probably thought that it would be more of a straightforward type of battle between Ndongo and Burns. But, you know, he kind of, you know, went at it, you know, I guess he kind of, like, went at it differently there. And so that kind of, you know, threw him off for, like, those first few rounds or so. And once that happened, he couldn't really catch up until, you know, the midway point of the fight. And pretty much by then, it probably was, like, too late for him from that point. So I think it was just something that, you know, Ricky Burns just kind of didn't expect going into the fight there in reference to his awkwardness and his power, I would say. So that's pretty much how I, like, summed it up, you know, for that particular fight.
So he hurt him throughout the fight?
I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say, like, seriously hurt him, but it was, like, kind of to a point where it kind of, like, made Ricky Burns kind of, like, second guess a few times.
Okay, the hesitation power, the Floyd Mayweather hesitation power, what he did to Pacquiao, at least.
Well, to Pacquiao, pretty much maybe. But, I mean, you know, my thing is like, I don't know. I kind of, like, put, like, Ricky Burns as, like, somebody that almost is, like, he's, like, a gritty fighter, but he's kind of, like, straightforward. Like, you know, Floyd likes to say no special effects, you know, straightforward there. And so, you know, Ndongo was kind of, like, controlling the fight with a jab and, you know, mixing it up a little bit. You know, what would you think about it, World Rank?
I think that he's a guy that he's big for the weight, he's tall for the weight. I don't know if you guys remember these two fighters, Jeffrey Matabula, who fought Donaire, tall, rangy guy with the jab, and just seemed like if you can get inside on him, it'll be hard for them to work inside. Their arms are so long, they're so rangy. Like, if you get inside with them, you can make a fight out of it. But if you can't get inside and you're just sitting out there chasing the outside of their jab and the outside of their punches, it's going to be a long night. Like, their power isn't great. Ali Funek is another guy like that. Somebody who's rangy. You know, they're not – if you can get inside on them, I think this was the problem Burns had. He had no answer to get inside. And if you can't get inside on Ndongo, you're not going to beat him. That's basically how I saw it. Like, he's not a guy that's going to blow you out the water, even though he knocked the guy out in Russia. I think that was an aberration. He's a guy that's going to stick outside, use the jab, try to throw some wild right hands. And if you can't get inside on him, it's going to be tough to beat him because his size for that weight and his style is awkward. And I can see him getting in ugly fights. I can see him getting like head butts. Like he has that awkward style where if you can't get inside on him, it's going to be tough to beat him.
So extrapolating it to Terrence Crawford, what would happen in the Terrence Crawford fight?
I think Terrence is a much, much smarter, fluid guy than Ricky Burns is. Like you said, Ricky Burns is just a basic fighter. He has a jab, and that's basically it. I don't see him doing really too much of anything. Where Crawford brings footwork, he brings movement, he brings both styles where he can get inside, but he can also box outside. So, Burns could not beat him in a boxing match. He could not beat Ndongo in a boxing match. Crawford could. So, you know, Crawford could counterpunch him. He'll have a better chance of getting inside on him. I think the burn spike doesn't necessarily reflect what Crawford would do. I think Crawford, to me, is still the better fighter. I don't think he would knock Ndongo out, but I don't think it would be a good style fight, if that makes sense. And Ndongo's a guy that's hard. He looks like a guy that's going to be hard to look good against.
Like if he, he would be like somebody that would probably like move a lot or probably, you know, try to tie you up a lot. So you won't be able to, you know, be able to open up with your punches against him. One of the guys that I was going to try to see if I could compare him to a little bit in reference to his length and range is Rancis Barthelemy. Like Barthelemy, we haven't really heard much of him in a while though.
I think Rancis is more of a fighter, if that makes sense. He would likely more stand and trade with you. He's not, and I don't think he would have a problem in the inside fighting, more so than Ndongo.
Like Ndongo is probably somebody that gives you different looks within the ring in comparison to Rancis Barthelemy. But I mean, like Barthelemy is somebody that, you know, is kind of like more patient, more set, and when he, you know, tries to throw his punches, you know, so to speak. So that's the thing that, you know, I kind of like gauge from Julius Ndongo.
And Ndongo, he's kind of wild with his punches too, though. He's kind of even in the Trnovsky fight, he's wild with his punches. So he's the guy he's not as basic or standard. He can give you different things, but he's not someone. How can I put it? He's not a fluid boxer, if that makes sense. He's more of a feel boxer. He'll try to feel you out.
Yeah. True. All right. Just for those that are listening live on the Go Long Media channel here on Blog Talk Radio and want to get on the Box and Talk, you can call in at 347-237-5539. Once again, that's 347-237-5539. And press one key to get on queue and be able to talk live on the show. They had another boxing card on through HBO, as you had like a light heavyweight contender, Sullivan Barrera, going up against a guy that had only, what did I say, about 9 fights going into this fight, Paul Parker. And Sullivan Barrera was able to get 2 knockdowns and stop Paul Parker within 5 rounds there at the Mohegan Sun Casino in Uncasville, Connecticut. I'm thinking that was pretty much like a, response fight for Sullivan Barrera, because he was out there against, you know, Andre Ward back in last year, pretty much like a year ago. And he was like, nearly like shut out in that particular fight. And he did fight one more time last year against Vyacheslav Shabransky, was able to get like a minor title there. And then he's able to, you know, turn around and get this win here against Paul Parker, which, you know, it's kind of a pretty weird matchup for me in reference to Sullivan Barrera. I would have thought he would have had a more challenging fight instead of fighting this guy, Paul Parker here, who only had 9 fights up to that particular point there. So any synopsis of that particular matchup or, you know, the status of Sullivan Barrera at this point of his career?
No on the fight, but I would like to see him go against one of the guys not named Andre Ward, like one of the top guys not named Andre Ward, to see what does he really have, you know, to see how he falls in the pecking order, I guess.
Yeah.
Which if I had to play, he wouldn't totally do well against Sergey Kovalev, Adonis Stevenson, I don't know.
I don't know. He might get chin checked by, you know, one of those two guys. But yeah, he might get chin check by them. He did mention somebody else. He did mention getting a fight against Joe Smith Jr. You know, after that. So he said that.
Oh, that'd be.
You know, he said, you know, why not? You know, why not have that fight happen there between him and Joe Smith? There at light heavyweight, that would be a good matchup there within the light heavyweight division. And I think both of them are within the rankings in the WBC. While Stevenson is going to be fighting somebody else, within the next couple of months or so.
Yeah, that would be good because, to your point, that would tell us about Joe Smith Jr. too, to see where he fell in the pecking order as well too. Because, I mean, both of these guys will probably beat John Pascal at this point. So, I mean, he's not in the consideration. But, you know, they're obviously under Andre Ward and Sergey Kovalev. Mm-hmm. And then
right.
Who else would be above them?
Like Ward, Kovalev, Stevenson, and then maybe Alvarez, later Alvarez. They're trying to, have the guy, Gavostik, that, fought last weekend at the MGM National Harbor. They're saying that they're probably rating Vosdick is higher than these guys that we're mentioning right now. So,
oh.
But I think, a fight between Barrera and Joe Smith would, kind of like put them, high in the light heavyweight rankings overall, I think within the top four or five. The winner would probably be within the top four or five in the light heavyweight rankings there. What's your stance on
that? Would be an exciting fight.
Uh-huh. Yeah. What's your stance on the world rank? Like between those two?
I mean, from my understanding, this fight Barrera Hatch was a replacement because he backed out of an eliminator with Beterbiev. They made the purse bid. I think Beterbiev won, and then he backed out of the fight. So I don't know. I know he was a main event. Barrera's in a tough spot because that division is so deep with so many good fighters. And I don't know if he can beat any of those guys. I don't know. He's a good fighter. I think he's just going to be one of those guys that never really get a chance to win a world title because that division is so deep and he doesn't have a big promoter. And, to back out of an eliminator with the top five guy or top 10 guy tells me that he doesn't want the division. And the fact – the best of the division. And the fact that he's picking Joe Smith out when you got all these Russia guys and Ukrainian guys and Stevenson and Kovalev, that tells me that he's not going to be really factoring it into the picture, So, I don't see him as a threat to the division.
Yeah, you do have what you asked about Beterbiev?
Did he win an Olympic medal?
Yeah, I thought he did. I thought he was, I don't know if he was like a Olympic gold medalist, though. Might have to check that.
So, my thoughts on Beterbiev, he don't look as dominant as, say, like a Sergey Kovalev or somebody like that. Like, don't get me wrong, he ain't no slouch, but when I see him fight, I don't get like, oh, this is that guy, or he will at some point be that guy. I don't get that from him. And so, maybe Sullivan Barrera team saw something in him that I hadn't seen, but his first few fights, mm-hmm. Some of them he looked really good, but there were a few where I was like, this the guy who they said beat Sergey Kovalev in the amateurs, and I don't know. It was something about him. I can't remember exactly what it was.
Yeah.
It was something that made question, like, how legitimate is this guy really? Because I guess it was one of those fights where he got hurt and, But I guess it could happen, but he didn't look as dominant as they tried to make him seem.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, they talk about Sergey Konev, but for the most part, we've seen him dominate people. You know, like,
yeah.
I think it's a fair assessment to say that he's you know, a top guy or 1A, 1B, you know. But I'm not sure about Better BF.
Right. Oh, with a correction on the thing for him and in the medalist, he was like in the world championships. He won a gold medal in the world championships in 2009, but he was in the 2012 Olympics, but he lost to Oleksandr Usyk. So, yeah, he wasn't able to get a medal there because, you know, Oleksandr Usyk was there running things. So, yeah, that was the thing on Beterbiev, but they had like other contenders that are out there within the light heavyweight division too. I mean, you know, Nathan Cleverley. I would like to see what happens with Marcus Brown, where his next fight will be at. I mean, he did, like, Marcus Brown did call out Donna Stevenson after he beat Williams in his last fight. But, you know, now with Stevenson, you know, going up to this rematch with him and Fofara, then I'd like to see where Marcus Brown falls within his next particular fight. So, like you were saying, World Rank, there's like a lot of people there within the light heavyweight division that could be matched up with each other to kind of, you know, clear things up a little bit.
I think another thing is with Barrera is these guys at the top of the division, they got a promoter, either if it's Al Heyman, if it's Top Rank. I know Stevenson, I think, just signed with Top Rank. You got Kovalev, Ward, Rock Nation. You got all these guys with big promoters, and Sullivan Barrera is with Main Events, even though Kovalev is with them too. But I don't think they have the, how can I say it, the cachet to kind of move their guy around like the other promoters, like the way that Al Heyman may move Marcus Brown, or the way that the Canada promotion moves Better BF. I don't think they have that type of cachet or even money just to put this guy in the right place with the right fight.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. I think I think it's the money. I'm trying to figure out who the guy is that's in Canada. I think it's Yvon Michel. I think that's a promoter that I'm thinking about that kind of deals with a lot of the guys that are, you know, in the light heavyweight division there. So, you know, he's one guy. Yeah, because he kind of like handles – he handles Stevenson, Better BF, and Alvarez in the light heavyweight division. So that's pretty much the guys that they have there within that particular weight class that Yvon Michel handles. And so that's why you have – when you have a bunch of those fights that are up there in Canada, he's kind of like the lead guy that, you know, does the promotion for those fights, you know, kind of like, you know, over in Brooklyn, how they have – you know, another guy pretty much handling. So it's kind of like regional in that case. So while you do have like Al Heyman putting his, you know, hands on it, he's kind of like the advisor to everything and kind of like sees if, you know, these particular fights can be on, you know, national TV or broadcast television instead of, you know, a local cable channel or something like that.
Yeah, he gives the guys the platform. Like a lot of big promoters, they give the guys the platform. Main Events doesn't have a platform. Besides Kovalev, they don't have a platform where they can put themselves on a card. Like Main Events has their own card. You don't see that a lot in half TV. That's why you see Sullivan Barrera on a HBO, not even regular HBO. He's on HBO Latino, you know, fighting someone that you never heard of. So, you know, these other guys can be put in situations where they could be moved and manipulated to get title shots, while other guys have to take the tough route because they don't have the big promoter.
Who was the guy who knocked out Fofara?
Joe Smith did.
Okay, so yeah, I mean I think that'd be a decent fight though. Sorry for going off on a tangent. I was curious.
Yeah. All right. Let me see if I could get this other caller in. Area code 813, what's going on with you?
Hey, what's up? This is Terrell calling from Tampa, just checking in. What's going on with everybody? Happy Easter.
Happy Easter.
On there, Brother Terrell, man. Yeah, we were just going through these, light heavyweight matchups. You had, Sullivan Barrera win his fight that was on HBO Latino there where, World Rank was saying, he was, looking to see if he could get a fight between him and Artur Beterbiev, but the purse bid kind of fell through. So he ended up fighting a guy that had 9 professional fights up on his record there last night. And he was able to, score the knockout in 5 rounds against the guy, Paul Parker. And so we were looking at potential matchups that could happen with Sullivan Barrera. And, one of the guys that he called out after the fight was Joe Smith Jr., which, kind of would be a good fight, but we're not necessarily sure, how that would, measure up as far as, like, the pecking order within the light heavyweight division. When there's like a lot of guys that are out there still.
That, considering that within the WBC, we got Donna Stevenson sitting at the top in the WBC. Joe Smith is at number 3 and Sullivan Barrera is at number 8. What was kind of disappointing was the fact that Donna Stevenson was supposed to fight Joe Smith in New York on top of that, but that fight fell through. I'm not sure exactly the reason why, but I don't know if Barrera is simply trying to climb the ladder to get into position to challenge for the title. I mean, he already looks to be in the top 10, so I'm not sure what his strategy is. I guess he's just trying to climb that ladder, like I said. Looks like he's at number 6 in the IBF. So he's a ranked fighter, so that's good for him. I guess he's trying to climb that ladder to get into his position to fight for a title within a sanctioned body.
Probably the least risk, too, though, Terrell.
What's that?
He's probably trying to take the least risk because, them some big boys, some real guys who are on top of the division. And so Joe Smith, while he did knock out a few good fighters, people have their questions about him still.
Yeah, it's definitely some good, solid names at the top from Eldier Alvarez out of Montreal. Kovalev, where Joe Smith, Badu Jack, who just came to the division. So it's definitely some good, solid fighters within light heavyweight, definitely.
Yeah.
And kind of even what Rick said, that some guys are trying to take the path of least resistance to a title. So it could be that, too.
Now, I see that Barrera is ranked number 4 in the WBA, and you have, unified champion Andre Ward there as the super champ and Nathan Cleverley as the regular champ. So maybe if, Ward is able to get this win over Kovalev in the rematch, then maybe he could, try to go after, Andre Ward once again or just go after that regular champion, Nathan Cleverley. So that probably might be his best bet, is to try to get that regular championship first and then see if he's able to challenge, somebody else there for the belts.
I mean, that fight sounds more like realistic too. Wouldn't you say? Cleverley.
Well, him against Ward again, or Cleverley? Or Cleverley? Yeah, actually, Cleverley. Yeah, that sounds like something that would be more possible at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Maybe he could, try to go after that if the whole thing with him and Joe Smith kind of like, falls through. Then he could, see if he could challenge for that WBA regular title. All right, I was just going to get into the next segment here. Just looking forward to, what's going on next week as we have the card at the Barclays Center that's headlined by the welterweight bout between Sean Porter and Andre Berto, pretty much a crossroads. I would say it's a crossroads fight for these two. It'll be, a WBC eliminator for the WBC welterweight championship, and You know, the undercard includes Jermell Charlo, excuse me, against Charles Hadley for the WBC Super Welterweight Championship. Did have a little bit of a disappointment as Luis Ortiz is not going to be able to fight Derek Rossi on this card because Luis Ortiz ended up hurting his hand, injuring his hand. So he said that he's not going to go forward with the fight next week at the Barclays Center. So, at least this fight card here at least will have, you know, those two fights there that's going to be on Showtime next weekend. Kind of like looking forward to this Jermell Charlo and Charles Hadley fight. I think Hadley is going to try to, you know, go after Jermell Charlo. To me, the Jermell is like the, you know, the latter of the Charlo brothers. And I think he's like a lot smaller than Jermell Charlo. Jermell Charlo was like a big guy in one at the super welterweight division, and two, he had a lot of power behind him. So I don't necessarily see that with Jermell Charlo, and I didn't, you know, see that in his particular fight against John Jackson in his last fight that was pretty much a year ago. Looking forward to that fight, and, you know, with Sean Porter and Andre Berto, to me, it's kind of like two guys that are, you know, fairly similar. I just see Sean Porter as more of a guy that will kind of like tie you up and, you know, try to get to the inside a lot between those two guys there. And so Andre Berto, I think, you know, this might be, you know, his last shot to try to get at the top guys within the welterweight division. So I'm looking forward to, you know, those two particular fights. Any thoughts and then predictions for these two fights? I'm going to start with Terrell first.
Yeah, I think the main fight that's of interest is the Berto Porter fight. and the reason why, for me personally, is the contrast in styles. We already know that Porter is I'll carefully call him a bruiser, and I like to carefully say that because he has had a world title before. So obviously that style has worked effectively for him at some point in his past when he got to had his previous title. Berto, definitely more of a boxer, and definitely more good speed. I won't say great speed, but real good speed. Typically more faster than what Porter's probably going to be in this fight. And not saying that Porter is slow and lethargic at all. He's just a bruiser, and Berto's faster. That's all to it. So it's really going to be interesting to see which person can impose his style upon the other. We know both these guys have been at 147 for quite some time. So I'm not really concerned with Porter's height. He has more than enough brawn to make up for any height differential that he may encounter. And he probably is going to come in as a bigger man, possibly as well. So no concern with that. So really, this fight is all about who can impose their style upon the other and come out with the victory. I forget what Berto's record is. We know he's had some probably about two or three, four losses maybe at the most. But
four losses.
Yeah. So I mean, it's more of a crossroads fight for him. It's not a career killer. But possibly if he does lose his fight, he's probably going to see himself getting the lesser tier fights going forward after this. But Porter, I think Porter Diffie has his eyes set back on getting a rematch with Thurman. That's what he's looking forward to. So we'll see what he can do. In regards to the Charlo fight at 154, it's interesting to see what he can do now. His brother's gone out of the division, so it's all about him at 154 sitting at the top of the WBC world rankings with the title and everything. So, and Charles Hadley is a guy that he's a name that's been out there. He's number one in WBC. Not a whole lot of people, casual fans, know about this guy. So we'll see what he can do for himself as well.
Yeah. And the thing with, you know, Hadley is that he's been, you know, out of the ring for a good little while. I mean, he's, you know, he had the TKO win against Anthony Mundine, you know, over in Australia back in November 2015, and, you know, hadn't fought since. So, and there was that whole little backstory, you know, with him and his promoter, Don King. I mean, you know, it's taking him a little while for him to get a fight, and then here he is. He was trying to get a world title shot, finally gets a world title shot, and then he turns around and sues Don King. So I don't know how he's going to move forward here, because, I mean, this was something that he was looking for, you know, for, you know, the past years or so, and he finally gets that chance, and then he says, well, yeah, I'll get this shot, but, I mean, you really hadn't, I guess he says he didn't really, wasn't really treated all too well or handled well by Don King, so he ended up suing him, but I just felt that was kind of interesting. Mike Grady, what's your thoughts on Berto Porter and, you know, what's going on here with Hadley against Jermell Charlo?
Hadley Charlo, I'm not very familiar with Hadley, so I can't really speak on that. As far as Berto Porter, I think that, you know, there are a few different ways that I can look at this. So Terrell said that Berto will probably be faster. That may be true, but I think that Berto's stiffness will make him appear to be slower as compared to Sean Porter. Because, you know, like, them big brooding muscles, and then it, like, take him, like, 3 seconds to throw a punch because, you know, he got to get around himself, sort of. So I think, I think it's going to be interesting to see if he can really get his punches off for him getting his own way. But I think the equalizer will be Virgil Hunter's plan for him. You know, it's interesting to see. I mean, obviously we know he's going to throw uppercuts, and he likes throwing uppercuts too, so, I mean, that helps him. But it'd be interesting to see what Virgil Hunter has in store for him, which includes the uppercuts, obviously. I think that, you know, the matchup is definitely, you don't know who's going to win, per se, because both fighters are decent fighters. And let's hypothetically say if Berto loses, I don't think he'll be, like, in lower-tier fighters. I just think they'll use him with other fighters along the same tier as Sean Porter to just propel other fighters. I think he'll be probably what Adrian Broner about to be. You know, he'll just be a name for other fighters, for, you know, up and top fighters, I'll say that. If he does lose, but.
Yeah, if he does lose. Yeah, I mean, like I was saying, it's like kind of like a crossroads fight for both guys, but, yeah, Terrell did say that, you know, it might not, you know, be it for Andre Berto if he does lose, you know, getting his fifth professional loss, but it just, you know, depends on, like, where he's going to be in the scope of the welterweight division if he does lose to a Sean Porter there. World Rank, what's your take?
Let me add one more thing for World Rank.
Oh.
I think it'd be worth it, right, Sean Porter, if Sean Porter loses. Because on paper, I feel like Sean Porter should be the favorite on paper. And, you know, in the legitimacy of the division, Berto is more like old news, sort of. Yeah, he had the hype early. We thought he was going to be what we thought he was going to be. He didn't necessarily meet the standards that we thought he should meet, but, you know, he's competitive. I mean, he can beat good fighters, don't get me wrong, but I think that it'd be worse for Sean Porter if Sean Porter loses to Andre Berto. Even though, I mean, they'll be able to make fights with Sean Porter easy, but I think it'll
just,
it would mess up his legacy, I think, more. I don't know, because Sean Porter can make fights easy. I think Sean Porter in a win-win situation, if he loses, it ain't going to necessarily hurt him, per se. But if he wins, he's kind of the favorite, so he should win.
All right, World Rank, what you got?
So I do agree on the part where it might hurt Porter more. I actually think it does hurt Porter more if he loses. I actually, you guys touched on the technical part of the game. I always look at when a fight happens, why is the fight being made? What purpose does it serve to be made? Because it's a business aspect to it as well. In this fight, Porter coming off all these important fights, all these big fights with these big names, And normally when guys get a fight, get multiple big fights, there's a tune-up somewhere involved. Porter's not getting that tune-up, which tells me anytime a guy's always sticked in with good fighters, that whoever promotes them or whoever leads them doesn't see them as a top talent. And the illustration I would give is Canelo or or Cotto or Pacquiao. There's always, when these guys fight a good fighter, they always, if they lose or if they don't look good, they step down a level to fight someone who's not on their level. But it seems like Porter is the guy who always getting hard fights. He's always being put in with someone that's a 50-50 fight. And that tells me that, to me, I think Berto is going to win. I think it's set up for Berto to win. Because if you really wanted Sean Porter to, you know, get himself back in the top of the division, you wouldn't keep stacking him up with the names. Every guy in the top 10 of the division, he's fighting every single fight. So I'm always looking at it as the aspect of the conspiracy aspect of it. And I think it's set up for Berto to, in a close fight or, you know, whatever the stage is, if it comes down to the scorecards, Berto's going to get the decision. That's just how I feel. And I think Porter's the type of guy, you guys say he's always going to be in, get big fights. His style isn't conducive to someone, you know, you going to Danny Garcia and saying, hey, fight Sean Porter. If Garcia has the option, I'm just using his name, he's not going to want to fight Sean Porter because just his style, his physicality, the things of that nature, guys aren't going to line up to fight him. So I think it's actually very difficult on him to win this fight because I feel like for him to continue to be a name in the division, he would have to win because if he loses, he doesn't bring anything to the table anymore. He's not a big enough draw, or his style isn't conducive to you, I guess, putting yourself out there to want to fight him and not really getting a reward out of it.
That's a good point.
Well, in reference to like his overall marketability, then I don't think, you probably don't think that Porter like puts himself out there that much that it would be a like lucrative decision to fight Sean Porter in comparison to somebody else. Like, I mean, you did bring up a Danny Garcia, you know, as an example. And, you know, from a business standpoint, it probably wouldn't be smart for Danny Garcia to go after somebody like Sean Porter when he, you know, could have other options out there, you know, either an easier fight or a more lucrative fight.
And I guess the other thing I would want to say is the boxing game is about fresh matchups. If Porter wins, where does he really go? He's already fought Thurman. You know, he fought Kell Brook.
Mm-hmm.
Unless Spence wins, you know, they're looking for fresh. And I think Berto would bring fresh matchups. He'll bring a Garcia. He'll, you know, and Berto has the style where it helps everybody. Like, you know, people watch him because he has the offensive ability. He's very offensive minded, but he's also easy to get hit. So he's easy on the eyes to watch. Like, Berto is never in a bad fight. You know, and he's somebody that, hey, Danny Garcia wouldn't really think twice about fighting. Thurman, if Berto wins, it brings so much more matchups to the two.
Well, yeah, it's like kind of looking at the two things. Yeah, Berto is you know, kind of like out there as far as like overall rankings. So like a Berto, you know, possibly against, like we were saying, Danny Garcia or, you know, Lamont Peterson, or if Errol Spence wins against Kell Brook, that they might go after somebody like Andre Berto instead of a Sean Porter because of the style of fighting that both of those guys have.
Well, Rick, I'm kind of curious. You said that, I think you may, and clarify on your statement, you said that Porter's always fighting top people. I mean, that's something that we want these fighters to do is to fight top people, you know, because, I mean, how many times we see, not just in the welterweight division, but other classes as well, where people find these soft touches in their opposition and stuff like that. So I actually commend Porter for fighting the Brook and now fighting Berg. I commend him for doing that. So that's something that I think we're missing in not only the welterweight division, but other classes as well, where the top people are not fighting the top people.
Right, but there's a reason for that. There's the longevity aspect of it. So Canelo, and I'm always going to use him, he just seems like the proper guy to use in this situation. You give him a Mayweather fight, but then you bring him down levels, even though but you can still sell him on that. You know, you can still sell him. Canelo sells no matter what. So when you get to that A level, they sell no matter what. Porter's not that type of guy. He's not the guy where, and yeah, we commend him for fighting the best, but he's fighting the best for a reason. You get what I'm saying? Like, Canelo should be doing the same thing that Porter's doing, but he's not. And there's a reason. There's a business side of that that doesn't allow the top guys to do that. That's why you're getting, everybody wants Triple G and Canelo, but you're getting Canelo Liam Smith, or you're getting Canelo such and such. You get what I'm saying? So there's a business aspect of it that it doesn't allow for the A side to fight back to back guys, because at some point they're going to lose, and they think there's a monetary or business failure if Canelo loses again.
So, Career, I think what he's saying, and you can say if I'm right or wrong, World Rank, but you're saying that if a guy is considered a top guy, then he, for the most part, gets protected.
Right, right,
and
right.
And so Sean Porter, he's saying something must not be along the lines of Sean Porter being considered a top guy, because ain't nobody out here protecting him. Sean Porter is in the frying pan and hadn't got an opportunity to pretty much cool off at any point in time. And you're right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
Sean Porter, I'm pretty sure he's a durable guy, but, you know, him fighting all these top guys, as World Rank alluded, is taking years off of him, as opposed to Canelo going to be in the sport for a long time because they're protecting him.
Yeah. I definitely see the point you're making with that now. But like, so with
mm-hmm.
Canelo,
yeah.
he's the top money guy right now, so therefore he can do exactly what he wants, and we're seeing that play out right in front of us with these Liam Smith fights, jumping up to, 164, 168, taking the Chavez fight. He's doing exactly whatever he wants. And Porter, like you said, definitely doesn't have the ability to do that, because that money draw is not there for him like that. That's been the top draw in boxing, like Canelo is. I understand.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the thing about, Sean Porter is, you know, it's not like he necessarily is, you know, openly calling out for these fights, but it just seems like he's, you know, one fight away from, you know, being in that second or third tier. It's just that he hasn't, you know, lost that particular fight in order to be in that second or third tier. I mean, you know, he did fight Keith Thurman, and that was like a very close fight. But if he was like in a fight where, you know, he ends up, you know, losing badly or gets knocked out, then that could pretty much, you know, be a wrap for him, because his marketability isn't as strong as, you know, other guys within the division or, you know, divisions above or below, you know. So, and it's like you're saying, it's all about that whole protection aspect of it. You know, some of these promoters, they protect certain fighters so that, you know, if they're able to build up to get to that big fight within that division, then that fighter is able to get the money that he wants, and, you know, the promoter is able to get the money that he wants. But, I guess, Al Heyman and the likes of Uda Bella and those just don't see it with Sean Porter right now.
I give you one example of somebody who career that I see is similar to him, and you'll ask yourself, well, what happened to him? Devin Alexander. Same thing.
Definitely. But, I mean, and those two guys ended up fighting each other. So, and that's what ended up happening to Devin Alexander, if you really think about it.
He had those big fights, you know, and then he got to that particular point, you know, where he did fight Sean Porter, and he didn't necessarily, you know, look all too hot, you know, against him, and he, you know, really didn't, you know, get much of a big fight until he was fighting Amir Khan, and then, you know, had one other fight, and he hadn't fought since 2015.
Yeah, if you look at his, Alexander's resume, who he fought, and in the order that he fought it, and the name from Bradley to McDonough to Khan to Porter, and then after that, there's nothing. There's no small fight. There's no tune-ups. There's all these big fights or meaningful 50-50 fights, but then after that, there's nothing. Is he active? Is he not active? Like, and that's what they do to certain fighters.
Yep. And that's the thing with it, Alexander. He was just that one fight away, particularly after that Khan fight, because he had the, let's see, what his string of fights was. When he got the, you know, he got the WBC super lightweight title, you know, against Junior Witter. Then he fought Ron Arango, then Andre Kotelnik, then Timothy Bradley, then Lucas Matisse, then Marcos Maidana, Randall Bailey, Lee Purdy, then Sean Porter, then Jesus Soto Carras, and then Amir Khan. So, I mean, you look at that string, I'm like, you don't see anybody with that type of resume in any of these divisions right now. You know? So, I think, and I think that's pretty much happening here with Sean Porter. He's just that, you know, one particular fight away where if he loses, you might not hear much from him. That's why this fight here between him and Andre Berto is, you know, very important. I just feel that there's a lot on the line for those two guys there, even though it's not a particular title fight. It's just that, I mean, this kind of like shapes the rest of these guys' careers, you know, whether who wins or who loses. Even though, like, you know, Berto kind of is more of a fan-friendly type of fighter. In comparison to Sean Porter. All right, just getting into the overtime session, and I wanted to, you know, touch on this here. You know, I kind of posted this article out and about yesterday, and it involves one of our favorite fighters that are out there in the heavyweight division, Deontay Wilder. It seems like Deontay Wilder is being sued by Dominic Brazil. This stems from the altercation that happened after the fight card in Birmingham, Alabama, back in February 25th. You had Dominic Brazil that was fighting in the undercard of, you know, Wilder's title defense against Gerald Washington. And, you know, when we were pretty much talking about this at first, the hotel altercation at first, kind of like same with, you know, Dominic Brazil and Deontay Wilder's brother, like, kind of getting into it while Deontay was fighting Gerald Washington. And eventually it stemmed over to the hotel. And so you're saying that Brazil is claiming that Deontay and Marcellus Wilder was attacking while he was with his wife and kids. He said Brazil was saying that, you know, while he was, you know, trying to get away from them too, he was saying to stop fighting in front of his children. And he said that Deontay said, man, pump your kids. And I'm just, you know, putting it cleanly right there. So I don't know where, you know, how far this is going to go. But Dominic Brazil said he's suing Deontay. I guess he's suing Deontay Wilder. He might have a lawsuit also against Marcellus Wilder, and he says he's also suing the hotel for not having a proper security within the hotel. So I just want to get a quick thoughts on that news tidbit that happened over the past couple of days.
Yeah, I'll go real quick. I think that this is nothing more than a ploy to sue your way into a fight. So basically you create a frivolous lawsuit, and from that point, now it draws attention to you and opponent, Deontay Wilder, in this regard. And at this point, and we've seen many, many frivolous moves in boxing. And this is just simply one of these things, I think, to drum up interest within to a fight, to create a bigger financial purse for the fighters. So this is laughable at best. I'm not saying these kids are not traumatized. I'm not saying that. I mean, to me personally, why would you have your kids at your fight anyways? I mean, or just even at the hotel. I don't know. I'm not sure how his family situation is set up, but I don't think your kids would be coming to your event like that, especially being there, young kids and everything. So, but really, I think it's just a ploy to sue us into a fight, and Deontay Wilder will go after him in a negotiations as long as he drops a lawsuit. That's how I see it, plain and simple.
I wanted to get an input from, you know, Deontay Wilder's favorite fan out there, Mike Grady. What you got?
I mean, I guess the man feel like he somebody interfered with his rights, so he has the right to sue somebody. But I will say his last fight was pretty exciting, Dominic Brazil's. And, I mean, if this is way of getting himself a fight, then why not get knocked out on, you know, network TV by suing someone and, you know, getting yourself into a fight? Why not?
I just feel it's, like, kind of interesting for him to try to, you know, do something like this in order to get a fight. I mean, he's already, you know, had a title shot there against Anthony Joshua. That was, you know, last year. So if you really, you know, wanted something where he could, you know, go after Deontay Wilder as a possible title shot, then he could just pretty much, you know, ask for it. But, you know, after this whole little altercation there, I just, you know, didn't expect him to sue him, especially with it being, you know, nearly 2 months after this altercation has happened. But, I mean, I guess if that's the route that Dominic Brazil wants to go, then so be it. World Rank, what you got on it?
So, I follow Eddie Hearn on social media, and I love Eddie Hearn. His videos and some of the things that he say and does, and his perspective as a promoter to some things that go on in the boxing business. He was stating that Dominic Brazil, after that win he just had, is a very sought after fighter in terms of people wanting to fight him. So I don't think he said that he was trying to put an offer to Brazil to fight Chisora or somebody else for some decent amount of money. So I don't think Brazil is having problems making fights. I think his last fight, there's opportunities for him. So I don't think that Wilder fight is the only fight out there for him. There's so many, on a personal level, there's so many codes in terms of just man-to-man codes that seem like it was broken. Like, even though you don't have respect for my kids, man, but just to say fuck my kids, like, and then going to sue me, that just don't seem like a good move. It's just so many different things. But from seeing Dominic Brazil and to see the way he handled himself, and, you know, there were some interviews about, you know, his personal life and him being a Division I quarterback and some things like that. This is a legit sue. I think he legitimately sued not for the boxing business or wanting to get a fight. I think he literally sued because he's a smart guy and he feel like he can get money out of it, but not from he doesn't want the fight. I don't think that the fight is the reason why he's suing. I think he just thinks, you know, this is a way that I can sue and make some type of money. I was about to say something else. I'm sorry, I lost my thought. The thing I did want to say was the only real bad thing I thought of this is with this whole Wilder out from getting a fight. Maybe, you know, how people have some of these fighters have some type of back some issues with the law and lawsuits and stuff. I just hope that this doesn't stop Wilder from fighting.
Oh, nah, I doubt it. I don't think it's, you know, something that is, you know, that major for him to, you know, not be able to fight. I mean, he was able to, you know, have, you know, be kind of active, you know, while the whole thing, you know, with the back and forth between, you know, him and Alexander Povetkin was going on. So, you know, that lawsuit was, you know, still, you know, back and forth between, you know, him and was it Ryabinski and, you know, Alexander Povetkin. And he was still able to, you know, be able to have those fights that he was able to have, you know, up until that point he did fight where he got injured. So I don't think that this would be something where he would kind of be delayed in trying to go after fights, whether it's the mandatory that was ordered, you know, between, you know, him and Stavern, or if he's going to go after Joseph Parker. But, you know, in the meantime, in the next couple of weeks, he'll be overseas over at Wembley Stadium, as he's going to be a part of the broadcast team for Sky Sports when they have that unification bout between Anthony Joshua and Vladimir Klitschko. And he says that he plans to, you know, enter the ring and says and make it known that he wants to fight the winner. So I don't think if there is a lawsuit and it's going to and that it goes to court, I don't think it's going to, you know, stop him from, you know, doing other things that are out there for him, you know, inside the ring. I'm trying to see like if there was like anything out there within the sport that we probably talk about, but I don't think there's really that much there. So I'm pretty much put a wrap to the show here. You have like I was saying, April 22nd over at the Barclays Center, Sean Porter, Andre Berto fight as the main event with you know, Charlo against Hadley as the co-feature. So we are looking forward to that. Let's see if I'm going to be able to have a show next week. There might be a little bit of an issue with that, but we'll see if I'll be able to make that happen. But in the meantime, catch the sister shows are on the Go Long Media channel. You have Take This L. Probably may have a NFL draft preview show coming up this week on Wednesday night at 7:30, and then we may have a couple of things going on with Cohort Truth on Sports Tuesdays at 7:30. So be sure to catch those shows there. And like I say at the end of every show, Point of Boxing is a hit and not get hit, not a standing trade. Thanks for those that called in today, and I'll catch y'all next time. I'm out.